all the fallout from the weekend's football. Brendan Goddard and Glenn McFarlane joined Gareth Hall for the Footy Fix.
Let's welcome in the team. Hello to you, Glenn McFarlane.
Yeah, g'day, Gareth. G'day, BJ. Five more sleeps to go. We're nearly there.
BJ Goddard, good morning to you, mate.
G'day, boys. How are we?
Good, thank you. We might play a grab from the start of the year, Cozzy, if we got it there. This is BJ Goddard before round number one, would you believe?
All right, BJ, are you finding a Brownlow medalist this year that can kick the footy?
No.
No, okay.
Oh, one. I got two. They all should be at good V. I haven't even looked at them, but I thought about them the other day. Ollie Wines. Here we go.
Is he in the market?
Hang on, I'll find
him for you. $81.
$81.
Yep.
Well, wow.
That'll be on social media shortly. There, yeah, Ollie Wines, BJ Goddard, $81.
You wouldn't read about it, would you, BJ?
Who was your second one?
I don't know who he said, Matty. Do you remember? We'll find out, but it doesn't really matter.
We got the $81.
It was Shay Bolton who got Mark of the Year. You were close anyway. He did receive an award on Brownlow night. So what was you thinking back then with Ollie Wines, BJ?
Well, I did my research. You look through the list. You look through the teams. In particular, the teams that are generally going to win most games. Well, not when I say most games, a large portion of them. So top four teams. Then you look at the midfielder on the list, in particular the midfielders, because, you know, and we may discuss later, Gareth, I've seen you bring it up this morning already about being a midfielder's award. And then you look at who they're competing against within their own team. So that's kind of what I looked at. And I saw, obviously, Boak had a great year last year. And I was struggling to find, someone else that would really pop up and steal votes, off Ollie in particular. And then I kept reading in a bit of the news around Port Adelaide in the pre-season how Ollie Wines is, taking his training and to a new level, and he's as fit as he's ever been, and that played a bit of a part. And then, delved into it and then thought that he was one that there wouldn't be too many guys that would steal votes off, probably he and Boak. So, and turns out he's a great value at $81.
Makes sense now, Macca, doesn't it?
It sure does. BJ, you must have won so much money. The Footy Fix end-of-season trip,
You
would have paid for it with that $81. Where are we going, Gareth? If BJ's going to take it?
As Gareth just highlighted, I'm not a punter. So that's the only difference between Whitey and I. Because Whitey said that he got him at $61. So clearly he looked after that I made mention of that.
Correct.
So clearly he was listening to our program. So. But the only difference between Whitey and I is that he would have put money on him and actually won, although he's probably just chasing all his losses.
And you you regret that at the moment.
You should back yourself. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
My topic of conversation today that I wanted to bring up with our listeners and let us know, 0416 90 50 52, BJ and Macca. I was going through the other major awards when it comes to individual sports around the globe, but also in this country. You look at the NBA MVP, and they changed the way that they done their voting system over the years. I think when it started, basically, was the players that chose the MVP, but of recent times, it's been the sports writers and broadcasters. For the Major League Baseball, it's the Baseball Writers Association of America. They have one representative in each city that has a side in that competition in Major League Baseball. And the Dally M, they have a judge that they assign to each NRL premiership match who decides on the votes there for their major award for the season. Now, we have a Brownlow medal that's decided by the umpires who choose the best and fairest for the season. Now, I've got nothing against the umpires. In fact, we've talked about them enough this year. They've got a tough job. But when we've seen them identify what deliberate out-of-bounds is on a few occasions, do they actually have a feel for the game these days to choose the award like a Brownlow medal, BJ? I think it's time, like in 2021, the AFL can sit down and say, what is the best way that we can make sure that our best award, the Knight of Knights, is decided by a group of people who can actually make an assessment properly without worrying about umpiring decisions and then pick out who is actually the best and fairest for the season. I'm not saying that Ollie Wines wasn't, by the way, but I think we can do it a little bit better.
No, I'm glad you brought this up. it's been a discussion, a topic the last couple of days, and we touched on it yesterday, actually. And I was going to kind of roll it into my boiling point because I didn't really have one. But I totally agree. I think it's only the only argument I've heard against changing it is just, I think, much more from a tradition point of view, and the traditionalists don't want it changed because it. I think, did you make a point this morning, Gareth, that for the first 10 years of the AFL that it wasn't
correct?
Is that what that tweet meant?
It was. I think it was voted by the players in the first 10 years. It definitely wasn't voted by the umpire. So they've changed it before. I don't know why they don't change it again. And it's a harder game for the umpires to umpire these days, and you just make it a little harder.
And I agree from the sense that it has to be. It would be so hard for the umpires to make a judgment on who was the best player or who the best three players were on the ground after a game of football. I think I must find this out. I'll give my a good mate of mine, Dan, who's head of the umpires, and how the umpires actually do it. Because my understanding is they actually have a short discussion at halftime of who's going well, etc., and then readdress that obviously after the game to pick and have a discussion around who's the best three players. But I think based on what they need to do and need to focus on, which their priority during a game is just about umpiring, and there's so much to think about, it'll be near impossible, like a player. I always said that if we walk off the end of the ground and have a discussion with one another, if a player can tell me who was the best player on the ground, for me, he's been ball-watching and watching the play too much. So it'll be the same for an umpire, is that their attention should be not just watching the ball, but they're watching, you know, off the ball when they're the off-ball umpire. They're watching little things for holding, all that kind of thing. So actually don't get a full sense of who actually had the biggest impact on the game and was the most influential. So I agree with you that it has to be taken out of the umpire's hands for their sake, because it's such a hard job generally just to umpire, let alone pick the best player on the ground. So to have someone sitting up in the stands taking everything in, and then making a calculated call on who are the best three players on the day, I think you get a more accurate. And the point too is that I think it was right last night in terms of who was at the top of the leaderboard. But I think in other years where a ruckman or a forward has had an unbelievable year, I don't think they get rewarded as much as they should. So someone like, say, Max Gawn, that comes out next year and is arguably a top three player in the competition, but he finishes 10th in the Brownlow, that shouldn't happen. Or a backman, or a forward, or for anyone in that instance.
Well, Tommy Stewart was the most successful backman in the Brownlow medal votes there last night. He got 8 votes, but he was instrumental and he was nearly the most important player for Geelong. So I'm not saying it's an easy job and there's different criteria how you would actually choose the most influential player on the ground, but I think it should be taken away from the umpires, Macca. And it's my footy furnace to kick it all off, and I think it's BJ's boiling point, because you have other awards. We understand that. The coaches award, the MVP award, who the players vote on as well. But we don't see, it's not an award that's celebrated by everybody outside of the game in a way. It's the Brownlow medal. It's the Brownlow medal that has the free-to-air coverage. Everybody dresses up. It is the night of nights for the sport of football and the AFL, Macca. So I think the voting system should be respected a little bit more for mine.
It's a worthy topic to discuss, I reckon. I'll play the devil's advocate. I love the misspeak of the Brownlow medal, that the umpires do it. They've always done it. There's been controversy.
They haven't always done it, Macca.
They have. Yeah, they have. Gareth, no. They've always done it. They, you know, it was one of those quirks of nature back then when they decided to give the umpires which is a weird thing back then, isn't it, to give the umpires. But back then there was one umpire and there wasn't the speed of the game. So I actually take your point. And it was a little bit ad hoc. Sometimes back then there was one instance and a huge controversy back in the 30s where they put a guy's surname, but the trouble is there was a player who had a brother in the team, so who was a gun as well, and there was huge controversy about that. But I think that just adds, from my end, to the mystique of the medal, and that's why I'd prefer to keep it the way it is. They don't often get it wrong, which is quite bizarre. If you look back, there's only probably been a few controversies in recent years. Maybe Matt Prittis, maybe Shane Woden in 2000. I think Chris Judd won Dane Swan's award, and then flipped around. Swan won, Judd's won a year later. So there's been a bit of controversy there. I don't know that.
Even if Fife's second one?
Which was that, sorry?
Fife's second one. He wasn't. the best, yeah, probably been a top three player in the competition that year.
Yeah, no, I agree, BJ, in that sense. And I think it's a worthy discussion to see whether... I think the important thing is now they do have so much on their plate, Gareth, as you mentioned. You know, we look at it and we look at individual incidents and we go, what is going on here? But I just don't think they often get it wrong. And as far as the midfielders medal, I completely agree that it's a disgrace that it is totally swayed to the midfield. But so is the Coaches Association vote. So is the MVP. I don't know whether that's a broader conversation. That, you know, the fact that Stephen May gets one vote, I shake my head and think, what the hell's going on there? Stephen May, such an important player. And you're right, Tom Stewart. How good is Tom Stewart? And to get, you know, only the 8 votes is crazy. But personally, me, I just think it's been going since 1924. I wouldn't change it unless there's a huge controversy. And at the moment, we haven't quite had that.
I would love to employ someone like a BJ Goddard and another one of our colleagues here on RSN Central, Mickey McGuan. It'd be fascinating to see what they vote compared to the umpire regarding what they believe who has been the most important players on that footy field. But it's a topic that everyone can discuss, BJ.
Yeah, definitely. I just think you get a better spread of positional players in that 3-2-1. So, I think midfielders still have... I think consistently have the biggest impact on games because they're obviously around the ball a lot more, so they can. But you'd have those twos and ones would look vastly different, I think, in my opinion. And you got to think of an umpire too. So the umpire, when he has time to stop and think and almost see things in general play, is at a stoppage, right? So it's the midfielders are under his nose. So he's only human, so he can only like recall and remember things that. He vividly sees, which is generally around a stoppage, around stop plays, or if it's maybe even if it's a forward where he takes a mark and goes back and has a set shot and does that 7 times a game. Like an umpire consciously remembers those things. So it's only human, and that's why it's so heavily weighed, I think, the 3-2-1 votes in the majority towards midfielders, because that's what they kind of last remember and have time to stop and think about it.
0416 90 50 52 to join the conversation. We need to take a quick break on the other side of it. We'll preview the grand final with Macca and also BJ Goddard as we are quickly approaching now, would you believe, the grand final between the Demons and also the Western Bulldogs. Let us know who you think may be the Norm Smith medalists come Saturday night. 0416 90 50 52. Or who are you tipping? Are you with the Demons or the Doggies? Now, just before I go to a break, I'll leave you with this. For the first 10 years, this is for you, Macca. For the first 10 years, the medal was awarded. The votes were decided by the media. The voting is currently decided upon by the field umpires. There have been a couple of different voting systems from 1924 to 1930. Only one vote was awarded per game. From 1931 to the present, there are 6 votes awarded per game, 3, 2, and 1 for the top 3 players. However, from 76 and 77, there were 12 votes per game, 3, 2, 1 from each of the 2 field umpires, which would have been a nightmare for Gil to read out because we would have been going to around 3 a.m. in the morning.
He was going fast, Gil, wasn't he?
He was.
But no, definitely from 1924 to 1930, the field umpire, one only, awarded one vote per game. So one vote per game. So that was the field umpire when there was only one. But, yeah, there have been a number of different sort of systems and voting systems, but the umpires have been the ones. And that sort of added to the mystique of the medal, I reckon.
We'll take a quick break. This is the Footy Fix. Gareth Hall, BJ Goddard and Glenn McFarlane with you. We'll come back and we'll preview the grand final. Josh says they use the stat sheet after the game and rely on emergency umpires heavily, is my mail. Anyway, we'll move on. We'll talk about the game this weekend. Melbourne take on the Western Bulldogs in the grand final. Really hard to go through our Monday Marvel and stock markets this week because there was no matches over the weekend. So we might just get stuck in to the preview. If you've got a Monday Marvel for us, lads, let us know. But we'll start off with who you think will win, basically. BJ, I'll start off with you, then go to you, Macca. I was looking at the midfield battles, and I don't think I've ever seen a more evenly poised midfield battle for a grand final for quite some time. You look at Vining taking on Liberatore, should be a wonderful clash. Bontempelli going head-to-head with the Petrarca. Oliver and McRae going at it. And I think Gawn's probably got the advantage over Steph Martin, but Steph Martin's, he has a little bit of X factor for this game for mine, BJ. If he can turn up and take on a Maxi Gawn and at least stop his dominance a little bit, the Doggies might just go, it could help the Doggies win this year's grand final.
Yeah, it sounds cliche, doesn't it, that the midfield will kind of dictate the outcome of the game, but that's that's how it kind of works, in particularly in finals too, because it's two teams in a serious arm wrestle where the game's played, you know, between the arcs through the midfield a lot, because it's harder to move the ball and there should be more, you know, stoppages. So, I think Harms will go to Liver, which they did last time they met, I think, or early in the year, to shut him out. Because if we want to jump ahead, I was thinking about it and the Norm Smith. So, can we, with Norm Smith predictions, can we do one if the Bulldogs win and if
100%, you can do whatever you want, you genius.
So my Norm Smith was Liver, I think, just because of the finals and how the game should be played and generally how they're played, it'll suit him down to a T and he'll have a pretty big influence. But in saying that, I was like, yeah, well, Harms kind of had the better of him last time, so that throws a bit of a spanner in the works. But I'll stick with Liver in case they do let him off the chain, because they've got a lot to think about. But yeah, I agree that it's going to be fascinating, that battle in the midfield. But I just still think Melbourne, because of the defensive structure, you know, how they've consistently done it throughout the year, what it's looked like, I'll back them in to get it done one last time. They're in a good frame of mind. But I think that week off, if it wasn't for the week off, I don't think anyone could have not picked Melbourne, right? Because of just what the Bulldogs have done, how they've done it, the toll it had to have taken mentally more than anything to get themselves up, two big wins in hostile territory. It's been an amazing effort, but that week off is going to benefit the Bulldogs as a team as a whole. And then the biggest question mark, I think there's always a story leading into a grand final, isn't there? Someone racing the clock, and it's Stephen May at this time. So he'll have his... My prediction is that he'll have his biggest test on Wednesday, because I want to give him a couple of days, a main training session. It might even be Thursday. They might skip it out to Thursday, where they want to see how he actually pulls up from running at full tilt, because that'll be the last box he needs to tick, is that when he runs and kicks the footy, generally doing things or he's not consciously thinking about his hamstring. So get him in a bit of mat simulation towards the end of training and see how he pulls up a day or two later to give them time to make a decision.
So just with Stephen May, if he doesn't, like, he's such an important player for the Demons, especially with the matchup like Norton. There was some terrific vision in one of the footy shows there the other day, is how the Doggies wanted to really isolate Norton and Lever, and they were playing cat and mouse with the defenders there, and they were trying to, like... Norton would always go towards Lever to try and get that match up. And on a few occasions, Smay just gave up and let Lever have Norton. And on a one-on-one, Norton was just too good for a Lever. So it's a fascinating battle, that part of the ground. So he probably... It's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry to Macca, I'm talking a lot. But it'll be huge, because they've had so much consistency with those two there. I think they've missed maybe one game each, and it was maybe Lever or two where he... arguably got rested. He said he could have played, but he didn't. But they've had continuity and consistency down there. So if May was to miss, which it's hard to think that he is, and all the talk out of Melbourne is that they're confident they'll get up, but it'll be a massive blow, because he may have mentioned they did it. So that's a battle just within a battle. And they're the things you talk about, good teams prepare for, and most teams talk about each week. And in this instance, how are we going to deal with Lever and May? Most teams would have talked about that throughout the year, but the reality is, one thing talking about having a plan, there's another thing executing it. So Bulldogs have done such a good job at doing things like that, and isolating Lever, making him accountable, making May accountable, the way they do it, staying within a kick within the ball, always being dangerous, all those kind of little things that you prepare for, but it's the ability just to execute, and in this situation, execute under, you know, in the biggest day of your footy life for most of these guys. So it's one of those battles within the battles that's going to be fascinating. But if May's not there, it's huge, and it's a positive for Bulldogs, to be honest.
What do you think's happening? Where has this match been won there on the weekend, Macca?
Yeah, I think you're right, guys, when you're talking about the May-Lever scenario. That's crucial, I think. It's going to be won in the midfield. We know that. But, I think probably the Bulldogs midfield bats even slightly deeper than Melbourne's, and that's saying something, because I think what you said before, Gareth, is spot on. This is as good a midfield battle as I reckon I can remember in a grand final for a long, long time. There's so much depth there. I think the Gawn scenario in the ruck is huge. Max Gawn, he's ruckmen don't win Norm Smith medals. They really don't, BJ. You know that. I don't think anyone's done it since Simon Madden many, many years ago. But he's a guy that could actually win it. We saw how good he was in the preliminary final. The May lever scenario, I think May will play. I'm pretty confident that'll happen, guys. So it might be an interesting scenario with lever, whether Shaki goes to lever in the sense that Shaki did that job on Alir in the preliminary final. Mm-hmm. So I think the part of the key is May and lever. If they can have a dominant game, I think Melbourne will win this game for sure.
BJ, they've had a couple of weeks to think about it, these coaches, and they're great tacticians, especially I think both of them are got great footy minds and terrific support crew alongside of them. Even if Simon Goodwin had to spend 24 hours in isolation because of a bad pasta. But do you think, how many curveballs do you think they'll have for each other? And how many they have? Because you don't want to, and you know better than I, but I would imagine that it would be difficult to try and implement something new on the biggest stage of all.
Yeah, no, there wouldn't be anything new. It rarely... They've seen footage from 23 games, the games they've played against one another, and they know all their tendencies and the way they structure up every different scenario of games. If it's the last 2 minutes of the game, it's the last 2 minutes of the first quarter. There's always a trend. Unless they've been keeping something close to their chest, they're saying that next time we play the Bulldogs, we're going to do this, and we'll train it at training, but we won't really show our cards against opposition, but we'll talk about it and prepare for it. But they're only little minor incremental things. So when you get to this level, generally it's more about us and it's about what we need to do to play well and what we need to do to get the games on our terms. So yes, they'll have plans for Lever and May. Yes, Melbourne will have a plan for, I think, Liberatore, and if Bontempelli gets off the chain, they'll have someone that, goes to him, all those kind of things. But it's generally, it's like, let's focus on us and just concentrate on what we need to do to play well, because that's what great teams do. It's more about us, not them, when you get to this level. So there were incremental things, little things that may change throughout the game, but overall, that the main thing teams are going to be focusing on is themselves and what they need to do to play well.
Different surface, different track, Macca, and I'll go to you, BJ, after we go to Macca here. Do you think any side will be advantaged by playing on Optus Stadium over the other, Macca?
What's interesting, Gareth, is they've both played their six times this year. The Demons have won 3-3, the Dogs are 2-4, maybe Melbourne slightly, but I think they've both played this ground enough to realise, and I think slightly Melbourne in that sense, but I think it's just a flip of the coin in terms of the ground. Gee, I can't wait to see what the stadium's going to look like. Well, we don't know this, but we're absolutely desperate to get the grand final back here next year, but it is going to be a great stadium. So I think Melbourne slightly in the ground advantage, but only slightly.
Okay, what are you thinking there? Do we read too much into that, BJ?
You can. I don't think there's any advantage. Again, what do you say, Macca? They've both played there six times this year, so you can get a little bit familiarised with the surroundings, all that kind of thing, the change rooms, just all those kind of things. But no, when it's a grand final, the ground, I think, has little to do with it.
0416 90 50 52, send us a text message if you've got a question for the lads. They're flowing in as we speak. Jono from Merbury says, what do you think of the hard training session of Melbourne where it looks like Spargo got hurt? Do you think this is a wise decision? God bless there. That's from Jono there, BJ.
Yep, it is. Train as you normally would. Train at the standard you would any other week. Nothing needs to change during the grand final week and the build up to it. So the week off's obviously an anomaly and a rarity, and arguably it'd be a one off thing. So they needed to do something to keep ticking over and stay stimulated, get the heart rate up, all that kind of thing. So I think it's a good decision. And generally, I've said this in the last couple of days as well, and most players agree that I've talked to over my time, is that at training, when you're consciously trying to hold back and you go a bit half hearted, and because they would have trained as they normally would, normal contact stuff like any other week. But when you go half-hearted, all those kind of things, you actually, that's the time you do get injured. So to literally train like you normally would is the best way to go about it, because I think you put yourself at risk when you're kind of changing your habits.
That must be so difficult to do, BJ. That must be so difficult to do, because your subconscious mind would be working overtime, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is, but that's part of the battle, the mental battle. Is that to get over that and just to let it go. If you're to get injured and there's a freak accident at training, then that's literally just bad luck, because
you shouldn't change. And that's what I'm saying. It's habit for these guys. And Melbourne have talked about it. I think Viney on the radio on ABC the other day talked about it. They were just going to train like they normally would. And that's what we need to do to get ourselves up. And they're a really big believer in training really hard and really well in the lead up to games. So nothing changes from their point. I'm assuming Bulldogs have done the same thing.
Brownlow must stay with the umpires. There are enough media and other awards. If you think the umpires have got it wrong, doesn't mean he has. I'm not the greatest umpire fan. As a long-suffering Collingwood man, that's from Herb. Macca, this is a good question from one of our listeners. How much inspiration will they use from the outside, these football clubs, e.g. Jim Steins for the Melbourne Football Club? Macca, do you think that they'll be getting ex-players in or using the Jim Steins as an inspiration for the Melbourne Football Club this week?
Yeah, I've no doubt they'll do that. And it sort of comes back to the individual as well. Like, you know, Max Gawn had an amazing connection to Jim Steins as a young fella. He wears that number 11. He calls himself a history nuffy, Melbourne Footy Club history nuffy. So there's no doubt there'll be an element of that, but not too much. I think some of the younger guys will just, as BJ said before, just want to keep it fairly normal. But it's hard to be normal when these footy teams have, you know, have had, you know, so little success. I think what is driving them, guys, and I know this is a fact speaking to both clubs, is the membership back in Melbourne. I think that's the thing that is driving even some of these young players, knowing the sacrifice that people have made back in Melbourne to, you know, to watch their team and to continue to put money in. I think that's the thing that's driving them as much as the emotion around the likes of the great Jimmy Steins.
What do you think the themes will be for the clubs this week, BJ?
No, I think Melbourne, just because of their, you know, lack of success. And, you know, when was their last grand final appearance? Early 2000s. So it's been a while.
2000, and just, yeah.
21 years.
Yeah, 2000, yeah. So I think they'll address a few. Like, we did the Saints in 2009 when we made the grand final. Ross got, we sat down with Lee Matthews just over lunch on time in South Melbourne there, and he just gave a few simple things, and it was nothing like inspirational. It was just, the main message were to keep things simple. And the one thing we all took out of it, and we after he left the pub that we're at, we just talked about it, all focused on the main messages were that the team that does the simple things for the longest generally wins. So that just simplified everything, because I've made mention before, haven't I, that it's important just to treat this as normal as possible. And we all know, as you've made mention, the subconscious mind can play games on you, but that's part of the trick, is to trick yourself into thinking and just treating it like any other game, and to prepare like any other game, because you want to get to the game mentally sharp, that you're just going, you're just playing footy. You're not mentally fatigued, and that 5% that can make a huge difference doesn't take a toll on you mentally, or lack of 5%. So it's important just to keep things simple. So Melbourne, I think, will be touching on the history and just what it means and the support. Goody made mention of it last week straight after the game, didn't he? Just about what it means, and he'd love the supporters to be there, and they know how much support they do have. And it'll be the same for the Bulldogs. But I think Melbourne has just got a bit more meaning behind it from a supporters' point of view, because of how much they've been starved of success the last 20 years.
It's 11:04. You with Gareth Hall, BJ Goddard, and Glenn McFarlane. This is the Footy Fix as we start the countdown to the AFL Grand Final. Just quickly in the NFL, Baltimore $3.80 live betting with the tab. Kansas City $1.27. They're at the end of the first at the moment, or start of the second, and it's Kansas City 14. Baltimore 7. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with your questions in just a moment. Got about another 10 minutes left on the Footy Fix. Gareth Hall, BJ Goddard, Glenn McFarlane with you on this Monday morning. So we'll get your tips, lads, and a Norm Smith medal prediction as well. I think we've got your selection for the Norm Smith if the Doggies win, BJ, and Thomas at Liberatore at $17 with the tab. But who wins the grand final? And then just confirming your Norm Smith medal winner.
Melbourne wins for mine.
Yep.
They get the job done. Bulldogs, Liberatore, and Melbourne. I want to go Gawn because I just want it to be a nice fairy tale, but he's not going to play as well as he did last week, is he? So I'm going to go sadly with another midfielder. Midfielder's word award, and it's going to go to Clary, Clayton Oliver.
Yep. So Melbourne and Clayton Oliver, and if the Doggies cause, not the upset, I suppose it'd be a little bit of an upset. It'd be Thomas Liberatore that lead them to victory. You get $17 for Liber there.
Gareth?
Sorry, mate.
What are the odds between
the odds for the AFL Grand Final? They've changed a little bit. They opened up the favourites after the preliminary finals, the Demons. They're out to $1.65, Macca, and the best backed in the last, what, 4 or 5 days, well, the money has come for the Doggies. They're into $2.25 now.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And you often find that, because this is an even pairing, and we often see that in a Grand Final, that the, you know, the so-called outsider is the team that's sort of backed in. Sort of the money comes a little bit closer. That's happened quite a bit. I think I'm going to tip Melbourne. I've been with them for, you know, probably about 6 weeks now. And when BJ, when I jumped off Geelong pretty quickly. So I'm going to tip Melbourne. But I think it'll be a classic game, guys. I'm going to tip them by a point. Like you, BJ, I'm going to have Clary to win the medal. Tipped that about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I wish I had backed it because it's a little bit shorter now. And if the Bulldogs do happen to get up, and that sort of week off before the grand final has really helped them, I think, and that brings them right into the game. I think Bont, and if Bont could actually win the Norm Smith medal and hold the cup up as a two-time premiership player with the Dogs, he's got to be right up there with the great EJ Witten, doesn't he, guys, in terms of, you know, and we sort of forget, but he's 25 years of age. So he's an absolute superstar, Bont. So but Melbourne, for me, with Clary to win if the Demons win the grand final.
Great leaders too, both clubs, haven't they? And we've heard them throughout the year on RSN 927's Breakfast Club, Marcus Bontempelli and Maxi Gawn. Different leaders in a way, BJ, but you can understand when you hear them speak and the way that they think about the game and their love for their players, you can understand why they were chosen as the leaders of their football clubs.
Yeah, Bont, I believe Bont's more kind of grew into like a great leader. Maxi's probably the one that was a bit of an outsider, wasn't he, at the time that he was appointed, and his history. Yeah, I think it was even during the week that, you know, the smoking ciggy incident got brought up again, and he told his, I didn't actually read the whole article, but yeah, his development as a leader has been unbelievable. I think Bont from early days was kind of labelled as, you know, potential leader, wasn't he, as a captain of the footy club. So Maxi's development and the way he's developed his leadership, which has, I think, really helped his football as well, hasn't it? So giving him greater responsibility has been so pleasing. It's been a great story.
Now, some news breaking from your colleague at the Herald Sun, Macca. Tony Sheehan is saying that Voss is the front runner for the Blues gig. Michael Voss lands in Melbourne on Sunday to meet with Carlton's coaching panel and present for the vacant coach's position. The Port Adelaide assistant will leave his Adelaide home, bound for Tullamarine, hoping he can convince Carlton's decision makers and impress enough to be considered for the role. David Teague was pushed out by the club at season's end. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Macca, but Michael Voss was nearly the unbackable favourite last time Carlton had their coaching role up for grabs.
Spot on, Gareth. Absolutely spot on. He thought he had the job, and all of a sudden David Teague gets it. And he was quite unhappy with that, and that's why he was a little bit concerned about going through the process this time round. He didn't want it to be a boat race. Now, we know that Brian Cook has been appointed the CEO, which I think is a fantastic appointment for the Carlton Football Club. Absolute sensational appointment. They held out, speaking to a number of Carlton people over the weekend, they've held out to try as much as they can to try and get Brian Cook to speak to Alistair Clarkson, which we all think all along that he probably wasn't going to coach. They've had one last dig. They're going to continue to have one last dig. But the belief now, and absolutely people talking about it this morning, is that Michael Voss is more likely than not to be the coach of Carlton in that sense. But Adam Kingsley interviewed very well. He certainly did, as did Michael Voss. But certainly the whispers around at the moment are that Michael Voss is leading the way at the moment, not over the line, but leading the way, unless get a last-minute decision from Clarko to put his hat in the ring.
Hey, BJ, just the significance there from a player's point of view of having a leader like a Brian Cook as your CEO, does it make you stand taller? What would the players, like, what would, if you had a WhatsApp group between Sammy Walsh and Patrick Cripp and Mackay and a few of their leaders, would that help you get excited about the pre-season, hoping that Cook can lead the club, be a little bit more stable off the field?
I think as a senior player, you begin to understand the importance of those roles as you get a bit older. So some of those guys, you know, probably not taking anything away from it, but Mackay and Walsh are probably a little bit too young to know the significance of it. So Chris being a little bit older, but his record speaks for itself, doesn't he? So I think we all believe that the fish kind of rots at their head. So when you have someone of his experience and come from success as well and knows what success looks like, it's a pretty significant appointment for Carlton too. Because remember, everything funnels up towards or to him, doesn't it? So the football, the coach, that full confidence in Brian Cook and his role and the position he's in and what he does for the footy club is really important. And he's the one that kind of sets the tone, doesn't he? To get everyone on the same page, and once they all agree upon a certain path, he's essentially there holding everyone accountable to that and making sure everyone does stay on the same path.
Now, this is for you, Macca. Who is on the voting panel for the Norm Smith medal this year?
That's a good question. I don't think the AFL has come out with that. They usually come out a couple of days before the grand final. They'll obviously be Perth-based people in terms of the media. Usually on the Thursday before the grand final, they put a list out of people. I've done it one year, Gareth, BJ. I didn't sleep for three. I knew 3 weeks out.
Yeah, I remember you saying this.
What's that? Beg your pardon?
I remember you saying this. I don't know why you're stressing so much.
Yeah, for 3 weeks, Gareth, I didn't sleep, I reckon. I was just in... Because it is such an important... You talk about important moments, and I was very lucky. I got a year where only two players could have potentially won.
You weren't on the panel. It wasn't 2010, was it,
Macca? No, BJ. I wouldn't have been able to do it phone in 2010. No, it was the Brian Lake year, and it was either Brian Lake or Jack Gunston, and it was line ball between... strangely enough, not a midfielder, but so I don't envy the sitting in the press box, Gareth, alongside a few guys who have actually had to vote as well. And you can see the cold sweat start to come up on people. There's a lot of pressure, and I wish them all the best for this year because it is a really, really difficult thing to do in a grand final.
That's why I think the Dally M, they've got it right, the NRL, because even if you're a journo, you've got deadline and you're trying to write your story.
Yep.
And then you've got to try and think about who's best on ground. It's sort of like you're nearly the same bracket as the umpires in a way. It's very difficult, I would imagine, to do two jobs. We are running out of time. Bailey Smith, a lot of votes for him coming through as a Norm Smith medalist come Saturday. Hi, Gareth. Norton is the best forward on the ground. Looks like a dry track. He might be the difference. That's from Lance as well. So plenty of SMSs coming through. I thank you for that. Just quickly, how good was it to see Ben Cousins there speaking at the AFL? He looked good and he sounded healthy for the first time since I can remember, Macca. And that just proves how idiotic and disgraceful that documentary was, or that the Basil Semple story that they did on Ben. They knew he wasn't right. You see what he was like there yesterday. He was in a good frame of mind and he's going forward. That's when you should have done the documentary, and hopefully he stays like that. But I've never seen him in a better place.
Absolutely, Gareth. And you've got some great contacts in Perth and that as well. Speaking to a few people that I know over there, just say that he's in a great space at the moment. You're so right about that documentary. I don't know what that was. I felt it was really distasteful.
Yeah.
But the great thing is now, he looks like, and to have him back in the AFL fold, he's having a kick as well. Like, he's playing a bit of social footy in that as well. We can only wish the best for him because we need him back in footy. He needs to be back in footy for his own, you know, future. And I think it was one of the great things of Brownlow Medal Night, I reckon, to see him there and to see him smiling.
We'll subscribe now for the tips from BJ got after declaring, of course, Ollie Wines as the Brownlow medalist before round number one. Lads, we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks for that. Can't wait for the grand final. And I'd love a dollar for every time BJ gets asked. Geez, you were stiff not to win that Norm Smith that year, BJ.
Where, BJ?
Macca, were you voting then?
No.
Good on you, lads. Enjoy your week.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Glenn McFarlane, BJ Goddard.